Hi, and welcome. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Network. I'm your host, Lee Merriweather, with Pet Honoring, and here to help with all aspects of honoring our pets and our relationship with them. Hi, and welcome. Thanks for joining us today, wonderful pet lovers out there. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Lee Merriweather, of Pet Honoring. Here in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina, it is sunny and a gorgeous day. Thanks so much for joining us. Honor Your Pet is a show covering all things which honors our pets and our relationship with them. These include innovative and holistic pet care topics, as well as addressing the difficult but honorable end-of-life times and healing grief from pet loss. But the underlying focus here is really how we can best care for our pets and ourselves as pet parents. Honor Your Pet recognizes that pets are our family and honors all that they give us. I wanted to extend a heartfelt thank you to everyone who submitted pets and pet names, pet pictures of pets to be honored in the United Pet Honoring Ceremony, June 9th. It was a beautiful ceremony. Thank you, everyone, for participating and for the great feedback and for letting me know how much it helped and how grateful they were to have a special way to honor your pet. These United Pet Honoring Ceremonies are now held every second Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's free to send in a pet name, it's free to send in a picture, and it's free to call in and listen. And you can read more about this on pethonoring.com. Sponsorship is now available for the show. If you'd like to support this mission and sponsor a show, please contact me at 828-367-6097 or email me at pets@pethonoring.com. Today we have an exciting show. Our guest is Janet Velinovsky. She is the owner of Kaizen Pet Training and Behavior. She's also the Eastern Regional Director of HOPE, which is an animal-assisted crisis response group. She's a certified cat and dog behaviorist and a certified professional dog trainer. We have an exciting show with her today, so welcome, Janet. Did we lose Janet?
No, I'm here.
Okay, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm pleased to be with you.
Oh, this is wonderful. I can't wait to learn more about what you do, both with your volunteer work and your professional work. Let's start with the HOPE organization. Can you tell us what is HOPE and what does it stand for?
Well, HOPE is a national organization of specially trained canines and handlers and team leaders. We volunteer our time to visit sites of disasters or crises, and our mission is to provide comfort and encouragement to those who are affected by those situations. The people we spend time with might be first responders, they might be residents of the community, they could be displaced people, and it could really be addressing anyone in the community who feels the impact of that disaster.
Wow. So you guys bring dogs in and help provide comfort.
That's how we got our nickname. We call ourselves comfort dogs, basically, comfort dog teams. And anybody who loves dogs, loves animals, knows how comforting they can be sometimes when you're having a bad day. Obviously, this is where the whole concept of therapy animals comes from.
Sure.
But the animal-assisted crisis dogs take this even one step further.
Okay. Well, I know anyone and everyone out there with a pet knows how much comfort they bring just in daily life, and especially with our own personal crisis. And I can only imagine how wonderful it is to have pets around and dogs around during larger crisis and community crisis.
Exactly. I say every pet dog is basically someone's therapy dog, right, on a personal basis. But dogs
have an
especially good personality and are well-trained can also be a benefit to other people if they're conditioned and trained to interact with strangers in strange situations, then they're ready to kind of take it on the road, if you will.
Yeah, and be there and fill in a very important emotional need. Well, how did this group start? Tell us about the origin and, what this need is filling on a deeper level.
Yeah, well, the concept started after a school shooting in Oregon way back in 1998. The founders of the organization realized that, of course, therapy dogs could be very beneficial to situations where people were hurting, were sad, or scared. But what they also realized at the same time was that these kind of situations, more intense situations, a little bit more raw and chaotic, would require additional training and experience than your typical nursing home visit or something like that.
Sure,
and that's
sure.
When they realized that we need to develop a different process for these dogs.
Sure, yeah, and I can only imagine the bigger the crisis, so to speak, the greater the value of the comfort and what these dogs can bring. And I really loved what you said. Not only is it for the people that have experienced the crisis, but for everyone involved, you know, whether it's the first responders or other volunteers or family members, maybe even.
Absolutely. You know, there is vicarious stress and trauma that happens just from being in a watcher, an observer of a situation, or being involved even peripherally. I'm sure we all experienced that on 9/11, watching the shows and seeing the video over and over again. All of us felt some of that trauma, even if we were hundreds of miles away. And
yeah.
So especially for people that are responsible for making things better, like first responders, that's a lot of stress on top of everything
sure.
else that's going on.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, I think that is, and this group has been around, or they initiated since 1998. Is that what you said?
Well, it took a couple of years to get organized and actually create, you know, the structure and the bylaws and things for the organization to truly come to be. And so it really, that happened in 2001. So at this point, we consider ourselves about 13 years old as an organization.
Wonderful.
So we've been doing this for a little while now.
Yeah. And tell us what kind of events Hope responds to.
We have done almost anything that you can think of. As I mentioned, we got started because of a school shooting. We've subsequently been invited to participate in other aftermaths of school shootings in California and in North Carolina, in Pennsylvania, and some of our teams were also at Virginia Tech.
Right.
Have responded to mass shootings. One in particular recently last fall was the Washington Navy Yard shooting where a dozen people were killed. And our Hope teams, I think we had about 18 teams there in rotation for almost 3 months, helping that whole campus there adjust to the reality and deal with the feelings that they had were having from the experience there.
Yeah, and helping.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
We've also responded to hurricanes, tornadoes, and flooding. We were in attendance after Katrina and Sandy, tornadoes in Indiana and Alabama, flooding in Colorado and Georgia. And most recently, we had several teams working in Oso, Washington after the mudslides there.
Okay. Wow, so a wide variety and any kind of crisis almost in a community.
Really anywhere that people are suffering, they're sad and distraught, they need encouragement. And where there's an ongoing situation, it's especially helpful because people get tired. They get exhausted.
Yeah.
The caregivers can get to the point where they need some care as well.
Sure.
And Lee, I want to mention right away that we do not self-deploy. Part of our structure and our guidelines require that someone invites us in, and that's an important feature.
Interesting.
Because emergency management people will tell you it's not very helpful sometimes to have dozens of people show up uninvited simply because there's a management aspect for them. And so it's our very great concern that we come to help, not to hinder or complicate. So it's always a necessary factor in what we do that someone invite us and that we are approved by someone who can help us be effective and be helpful in that community.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful a viewpoint or, you know, aspect that, you know, someone has assessed the situation and said, okay, yes, you know, this is what's needed and come on in and let's, you know, help people heal. So that's wonderful. All right, well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the different kinds of dogs that would make a great response dog. And we'll be right back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. Welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are chatting with Janet Velanovsky, who is the Eastern Regional Director of HOPE. HOPE is an Animal Assisted Crisis Response Group, and we are chatting about this group. And Janet, you mentioned that there are teams of person and a dog. Let's start with, you know, say someone out there is interested and maybe thinking about this. What kind of dog is your ideal dog to be a crisis response dog?
We enjoy including all types and breeds of dogs because you just never know which fluffy little face or cute little nose is going to resonate with somebody and make them really interested in interacting. So there's no perfect breed or type or size even. We like to get dogs of all sizes. But what we do look for are well-behaved dogs who can handle a variety of situations, noises, sounds, and smells, and be comfortable. And because it's, you know, we need to respect the dog's comfort level in these situations and not press them into something that they are not equipped to do. And then we need to we need dogs that definitely like people and are looking for interactions. And you know, those that kind of lean on you or melt into a puddle in front of you.
And
just can't wait to meet people.
Okay, so it's more of a personality and a dog characteristic than a breed. So any breed.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And what's the testing like? I know you said that there was training and testing for the dogs.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we have some minimum requirements, and again, that's geared to trying to help everybody be successful in doing this. And that is that we want the dogs to be 18 months or older when they begin the process. And that's so that the dog has had a chance to grow well and be you know, fairly steady and healthy and at that point. We also require that the human part of the team is at least 18 years old or older.
Sure.
Honestly, most of our members are well past that, but
that is a
minimum requirement. And we also require that the dogs have already done about a year's worth of visits on a therapy dog level. In other words, that nursing home, school, hospital kind of visit in your local area. And the reason being for that is that that lets us know that they do have basic manners, that they have been evaluated by some organization to know that they are appropriate for that therapy level visit, and that they've been out and done about a dozen of those visits.
Okay. Yeah, and what a great starting point, too. I know that pet therapy on a local level really helps people in hospitals and rehab centers, and provides a lot of comfort there as well.
You bet. And after they, if they hear about us and they're interested, they can go to our website and complete a little online piece that says, hey, I'm interested and here's something about me and my dog. And that gets distributed to the appropriate regional director, depending on where they're located geographically. And we invite them to attend an open house. And an open house is about an hour and 15-minute program that lets them know more about what we do, what the requirements and the processes are, and what they can expect as far as requirements in joining the organization. We currently are able to do that in a webinar, so it's really easy. There's no driving, no fee to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a nice educational piece.
Okay, great. So that's good. All right, so we covered what makes a good dog crisis comfort dog, but tell us about the person. What does the person need?
Really, we're looking for people that have similar personalities to the dog I described.
Okay.
They want to interact with other people. They're interested. We want them to be mature enough to, to be interested in learning and following protocols and those kind of things. But young at heart is a great aspect of it as well, because we have to be flexible but experienced. We have to be patient enough, because there's often delays as you arrive and you get out to the area that you need to, or while we are maybe debriefed on what's going on in the community and what we need to know. So there's things like that. So we have to have people that are mature enough to understand that we're there to serve and that we need to be patient and be integrated into the existing processes.
Yeah, I know a lot of times the crisis areas are chaotic.
Definitely.
And that, you do have to be patient and understand that there's going to be that element of it. So.
And there's, we get a lot of folks that come to us from certain careers like teaching, mental health professionals. Very often from first responders or people that have done that work, EMTs in the past, because they have an understanding of mm-hmm. what crisis situations are. But that's not always the case. There are some people that just, they're the type that just want to help when there's something going on, and this is a way that they can do that. So we're happy to have, again, somebody from any walk of life, all breeds, if you will, so to speak,
all
types of people and professions of people, but we're obviously a caring individual is a requirement.
Absolutely. And so you have dog and people teams.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the other ways people can be involved? Say, someone doesn't have a dog right now, or what are some ways people can be involved, all the different ways?
Excellent question. I want to mention that we do have people in our organization who don't have dogs with them, either, maybe their dog has passed, they don't have a dog that's appropriate for this work right now, but they're interested, and those people are given the role of team leader. And the team leaders do supportive type tasks for our canine teams. There's always that bathroom break that has to happen, or there's a crowded space that we need a little bit of help getting around in. And the team leaders go along with the teams and they facilitate. They maybe go in first to a crowded place and find the contact person that we need to speak with, find out the lay of the land, and then come back out and help the teams get into the position and into where we need to be. So they're kind of helpers for us, and they are so valuable. So we welcome anyone, even if they don't have a dog.
Wonderful. I imagine you do need someone who can help organize and be a point of contact and kind of help, you know, bring some structure to your team and what you guys are offering there.
Exactly, and so helpful. And we have some really awesome people that do that for us in every region, but we can always use more of those.
Yes. Okay, great. So you don't have to have a dog or a dog therapy dog to be involved and to help. And they would also go through the webinar and contact you to say, hey, I'm interested in being one of the, what was the name, the organizers?
The team leaders.
Team leaders, right.
Yeah, so we consider a group of dog and handler teams to be under a team leader, so that person helps them.
Wonderful.
Other ways that people can help us are, for instance, what you're doing is very, very much appreciated, and that's helping us share our story and our mission so that people know that we're available. If you're a school administrator, if you're a teacher, if you are related to anybody in the firefighter or police communities, if you are an emergency response coordinator of any type, we want you to know that we exist, that our services are free of charge, that we are trained and certified, and that we do continuing education, our members do, so that they can keep their certification. So we're not just a bunch of people with their pets. We really are trained and certified to be prepared to be of assistance in these situations and not to be a drag on their own resources. So getting that word out is really, really important to us, too.
Wonderful. Okay, great. All right, well, we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back with Janet Velanovsky. And this is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. All right, welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are chatting with our guest today, Janet Velanovsky, who is the Eastern Regional Director of HOPE, which is an Animal Assisted Crisis Response Team. And we have discussed what type of dog makes a great pet comfort dog and crisis dog, what type of person. Janet, tell us... What do you want people most to know about HOPE?
A couple of things. I hope that they can take away that there is a difference between therapy dog level teams and crisis response teams. And it's a matter of additional training and certification. So many people can proceed to that level if they're interested. But it is important to note that there are reasons why each type of team exists. And secondly, I want people to know that we are a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization, and we run on donations and fundraising. So if anyone is able to provide either a monetary contribution or an in-kind contribution of materials or products that we can use for fundraising or to cover administrative needs, we would be grateful for that kind of donation.
Great. So people can help support your mission and what you do through either helping financially or donating products or helping spread the word, letting, you know, community organizations know that you guys exist.
Absolutely.
And what's the website in case people want to go
read more
about it?
Our website is hopeaacr.org.
And I love this website because you have so many pictures of people interacting with the pets and the dogs and people hugging them and smiling, and you can really tell that they're beginning on the path of healing.
Absolutely. And there's lots of good information in there, too, about places that we have served so far and about how you can get involved. So if you missed anything or would like to read more about it, the site is a great place to visit.
Yeah, it's a great information about your group and Crisis. So what do you have a good story, or what is a good of how someone was really helped during during your event?
I do. We do both planned and emergent visits. So there are times that we're called out because it is an emergency situation and we don't have much preparation or advance notice. But there are also events that we are asked back to year after year, which are anniversaries or planned events where people are gathering to deal with grief or loss. And one that we are especially proud to be involved with is called TAPS. It's the Good Grief Camp, and it's held in Arlington, Virginia, over Memorial Day weekend each year. TAPS stands for Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Okay. And what they do is they have a three-day seminar, and they invite family members who have lost a military family member. And there's usually about 1,500 survivors there, including about 500 children, during this event. And each person wears a picture of their fallen soldier around their neck. One of our teams, Janice, with her dog Dixie, were sitting on the floor in the lobby when a woman sat down to pet Dixie. And after just a little bit of casual conversation, the visitor learned that Dixie's name was Dixie. And she kind of paused for a minute and looked at Janice, and she said her daughter had had a dog named Dixie that had been the love of her life. Mm. And then we Janice learned that the daughter was a young military veteran who left active duty, returned home, and unfortunately committed suicide.
Mm.
Clearly the woman was, this was a difficult situation for her to accept. And she told Janice she really hadn't been able to talk to anybody about it since that had happened. But she continued to pet Dixie, and after a little bit of silence, she looked at her and said she felt like her daughter's presence was there because of this coincidence of the name. And she kept petting Dixie and then started to share things about her daughter with Janice. And she said, you know, there was a feeling of closeness that she just hadn't been having with anyone else, and it was almost magical, and it allowed her to finally talk about the situation in public with someone that she didn't really know, and it, she felt like she knew this was a part of the beginning of her healing.
Wow. Yeah, I know every pet owner out there can attest to the fact that, you know, sometimes our pets do just provide an undeniable comfort that nobody else can, and nothing else can.
You often say the dogs have no agenda except maybe to be pet or find a treat in your pocket. And there's something about their not wanting or not pressing you to do anything that I think allows people to share.
Yeah, well, they just love, you know. They just love, and for this woman, it sounds like that Dixie provided that bridge, and like you said, that bridge to healing.
Absolutely. And this is not a unique story, but I particularly did like this one.
Absolutely.
I mean, all the time.
Yeah, and you can tell from the pictures on the website how people are engaging and you know, involved, and how much it means to them to, you know, to have that comfort.
And it means a lot to us, too. We are constantly grateful for the opportunity to be of service in these situations. And it's a humbling honor to be invited to share our dogs with these folks.
How wonderful. And how long have you been the Eastern Regional Director?
This is my third year, I think. But I've been in the organization for 9 years.
Nice. Well, that is wonderful. And the website is hope, HOPEAACR.org, if you guys want to read more. And please go there, look at the pictures, find out what they do, find out how you can be involved, even if it's just helping spread the word or making, you know, even a small donation. I think every little bit helps and provides not only individual healing, but community healing as well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing that. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about dog training and different ways that we can help our pets and ourselves with our relationship with them. All right, welcome back. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are chatting with Janet Filanowski. Sorry about that, Janet. She's the Eastern Regional Director of HOPE, which we just discussed, but she's also the owner of Kaizen Pet Training and Behavior. She's a certified dog and cat behaviorist, as well as a certified professional dog trainer. Now, you run a very successful dog training business, but starting with the basics, tell us the importance about choosing the right breed for your lifestyle. I know many people may not even think that there's such a thing.
Well, we've talked about the emotional attachment that we have to pets and to dogs, and unfortunately, a lot of times I think that getting a dog is a spontaneous, emotional, spur-of-the-moment kind of decision. And that can be kind of dangerous because, of course, all dogs, all puppies are cute. But it's probably wise to spend some time doing research ahead of bringing a dog home to find out what each breed was developed for, or a mix of breed. If you think that you know, if you have a dog that is a mix and you're not quite sure which breeds might be contributing, you might be able to get some help from a shelter or a rescue in letting you know what they believe. And it's good to do some research. So the same way you would use some care and time to choose a spouse or a house or a new job or a car, we really ought
right.
to put in some research for our pets as well, because you're talking about a 12 to 18-year-old commitment sometimes, and we certainly don't want that to go bad.
Right, yeah, like I know border collies tend to be really high energy, very, very intelligent and very high energy, so they're probably a breed, and this is what I've heard, that needs more attention, more activity, more, you know, physical interaction.
Right.
Is that a good example?
I mean, if you're just looking for something to hug and snuggle, get a stuffed animal. But
right.
we have to be realistic about how much free time we have to spend with the dog, about what kind of activities that you're likely to do with the dog, because a dog, almost more than any other creature I can think of, wants to be with you. And
right.
so, and they want to do activities that you're doing. And so we need to kind of know where we may spend time with them, and also where the dog will spend their days and nights. I mean, are you prepared to have them in your bedroom or only in certain parts of the house? Or, you know, do you know what you'll do while you're at work, while your dog is at home? And those are things definitely to consider. And a last item to think about is all the individuals who are going to have to live with or interact with this dog on a regular basis, even that if that means people that often come and spend time in your home. Now, I'm not saying everything has to be a perfect mix, but don't set yourself up for failure by not considering all the lives that this dog will touch. And that even includes other pets.
Right. Right, right. Okay, so the goal here is to think about the different breeds out there, what your lifestyle is, and start to research. Would they research this on the internet, or I think you said the local shelters would help as well?
Well, I recommend that you, if you're going to do breed research, there's two areas I would definitely check into. And one is the individual breed clubs. Most breeds have an organization of breeders and people who love that breed, who have put together information on them, who say what the dog should be like, and that's what they're judged to at dog shows and things. So you want to know what they're trying to create in their breed, okay? Then the flip side of that that I always recommend is that you contact a rescue group or two for that breed.
Sure.
So the rescue groups for border collies, for instance, will say, you better be ready to do some activities, both mental and physical, with that dog to keep them entertained, to work them, to make sure that you're channeling all the energy that comes with that breed so that you're going to have a successful life with that dog.
Right. Well, I think that's great, working with both the professional breeders and the rescues, because both of them will have great information on their websites about what lifestyles are good for those dogs.
Yeah, because if you think about it, the rescues see the ones that either don't match that breed standard or where people didn't do their homework, and now the dog is being abandoned or given up. But
right.
They're more realistic, probably, about what the downsides to the breed are than the breed clubs.
Right, right, right. So, all right, well, that's a great tip. You know, think about the lifestyle and the behaviors and personalities of the dog, you know, as well as how it can fit into your family and everybody in your family.
Mm-hmm. And even though there is a wide variety of personality and behavior in every breed, I always tell my friends, don't you want to stack the deck in your favor? You know, so yes,
sure.
You might get a border collie that's calmer, or you might get a golden retriever that's more active than some in their breed, but at least you get an idea of what they were shooting for when they were breeding the dog.
Sure, and what's going to make them happy and you happy as well. You know, you don't want either one, you know, frustrated.
Exactly.
So. All right. Well, once we do decide and we get our dog, how do we get off on the right foot? What are some very basic things that we can do from the start to help us establish a good relationship and good behavior?
I think one of the things that I would encourage people to do is not think of the dog as such a different character from people or kids that we do things with the dog that we wouldn't do with other individuals. For instance, I can't emphasize this enough, don't give your new dog or puppy free range of your house.
Right.
That is definitely inviting trouble.
You get your shoes chewed up, right?
Right.
You get your high heels chewed up, yep.
Exactly. So if you restrict the access to space and things for a while, and that might be a couple of months, it might be, if you're talking about a puppy, it might be a full year. Then you help manage their behavior and teach them what you want them to do. We wouldn't let babies have access to everything until they learn about their environment, and we don't give our teenagers the keys to the car just because they ask for them, right? We find out how they drive, we supervise them, we give them guidance before we let them out on their own. So you definitely want to treat a dog, a puppy absolutely, and even adult dogs in this new environment. They may have different ideas about what to do than you do.
Okay. All right. So when you're bringing in a new pet, whether it's a puppy or especially a puppy or an adult dog, you want to have a separated area for them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And a plan.
All right.
Yeah.
And a plan. Okay.
You want to spend the time teaching the dog what you do want them to do, and as much as possible, ignoring what you don't like. Because
okay.
If something, you ignore it, they were trying to get your attention and you ignore it, they think, that didn't work. Let me try something else. So
right.
If you're restricting things and you're managing what they can get into, you're going to be able to see what's going on and develop those good behaviors that you want. So you want to do a lot of rewarding of those good behaviors, sit and down or looking at you or coming when you say their name. And if you do a lot of that rewarding, you're going to get more of that behavior.
Sure. Sure. And I read somewhere that if you do find a puppy or a dog chewing on something you don't want it to chew on, give them, you know, just take it away and give them something that they can chew on. Give them their toy and they'll learn, you know, what is okay.
Absolutely. I call that, you know, taking away the illegal item and giving them the legal item.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, wonderful. All right. Well, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will continue talking about bad behaviors and how to avoid them. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather, and we are talking with Janet Velanovsky, a certified professional dog trainer, and discussing ways that we can help have a better relationship and better behavior with our pets. And tell us, what about the bad behavior traps? Tell us some of these and how we can avoid or get rid of them.
Great question. Of course, if you're doing your setup and managing the space that they're in, we're minimizing the bad behaviors, hopefully. And because you're spending a lot of time supervising a new pet, you're able to quickly redirect them or interrupt behaviors that you don't like. Okay. Sometimes it means we just interrupt them and get them out of the way, put them in their crate for a couple of minutes so we can think about what just happened and what we want to fix. It's not really fair to scold the dog a whole lot or give them a really hard time if they don't know yet what we do expect them to do.
What the rules are, right?
Exactly. But we're going to want to look at what we're considering the bad behavior and see if we can figure out, is there something that triggered it? Is there something that allowed it to happen because of the situation? So I very often in puppy classes I get, how do I get my dog to stop chewing my shoes? And my answer is, put them in the closet and close the door.
Partly
if we can help them avoid ever finding out that shoes are interesting to chew on, that is half the battle. So it really requires us participating in this. and we're the ones with the bigger brains, the checkbooks, and the opposable thumbs, so we can do this. It's not too bad. But we want to figure out what might be motivating the dog for that bad behavior. Like you said, if they're chewing on something they shouldn't, let's give them something they should. Maybe they're teething. Maybe they're just bored and they're looking for something to do with their mouths. So let's give them something that they can chew on. And then what do we need to change in the setup or the situation to avoid that happening again?
Okay.
Then there's also the question of, can we take the reward out of a behavior? So lots of people have dogs that jump up when they come home or when new guests come. Jumping up to a dog.
I was just going to ask about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a biggie. And it's just one of those things dogs do because they want to interact with us. And it typically gets a rise out of us, right? It gets a response. And if they're bored or they've been waiting to see you, they don't care if you're saying, oh, Fluffy, get off me. You're looking at them and you're interacting with them and they've achieved their goal. So we have to look out for those inadvertent rewards and see what can we get them to do instead. So dogs that are jumping, well, let's put it this way. Dogs that are sitting are not jumping, right? So if we teach our dog to sit and really reward that behavior in lots and lots of situations, then they're less likely to jump because we've given them something they wanted for that sitting behavior. So they think, wow, that earns me what I wanted. So they're not dumb. They're going to sit if that's what gets them what they want.
Right. So I think globally, a message for everyone and is to think about what you're rewarding.
Yes. Excellent.
Okay. That's good. And sometimes people will inadvertently reward the wrong thing because they either get frustrated or exhausted, and eventually, you know, the dog scratching at the door Then they let them out, and the dog learns to scratch on the door to go out, you know, or
you
something.
You are so right. Maybe you've experienced
right?
something like that before.
Yes. Yes.
And all of us do it. Even those of us that are trainers, we find ourselves going, oh, I can see how I just created that. And so the key is just not to let them practice it too long, to stop,
okay.
reset the situation, and say, what do I want them to do instead?
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's good good global advice for us, because a lot of times I think we just react and we don't think about how that's rewarding the dog for behavior with it we don't want.
Exactly.
All right, so what are your thoughts on dogs and cats living together? I know you're a cat, certified cat behaviorist as well, and I know a lot of people think it's not a good idea.
Well, I can give you a short answer. I have 4 cats and 5 dogs in my home.
There you go.
So
all right.
Not only do I think dogs and cats can live happily together, mine prove it on a regular basis. And I'm an advocate. Now, you have to, I always say, you know, ask the subject. Because if
okay.
a cat really hates dogs, you've got some work to do. So we
sure.
can't force things on them. But there's no reason with patience and management and taking it slow. I often tell my clients, I don't have many of you who regret taking things too slowly. I have lots and lots of clients who regret just throwing the animals together and hoping they'll work it out.
Right.
You need to take some time, and I call it dating. You know,
okay.
let them date a little bit before you ask them to become intimate. and maybe that
sure.
means having the dog in a crate and letting the cat approach and sniff, or vice versa. Managing the situation so that nobody can get hurt and so that nobody feels overly fearful. Again, in puppy class, I get, how do I get my dog to stop chasing the cat? And one of the answers is, get the cat to stop running. Well, how do you do that? You make the cat feel comfortable.
Right.
The dog may be activated by that cat running away from it. That's kind of a prey drive thing. But if we teach them that they're going to live in the home together and they need to respect each other, and that takes slow interactions with rewards for good behavior, then you have no problem. And I've introduced lots and lots of cats and lots of new dogs at different times, and it's the same process, but they all live peaceably together now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know with my dog, when we're walking in the neighborhood, if there's a cat, if the cat runs, she'll chase it. And she doesn't mean any harm. She's just playing the game, you know. But if the cat just comes up to her, you know, she's like, okay, hey, you know. I think that's an important element to help.
If you have a dog, maybe get a cat that is dog-friendly, dog-savvy. If you have a cat... get a dog that you can manage or that you can teach to be respectful of cats. So maybe not one that's into, you know, chasing rabbits and, you know, really has a history of killing squirrels or something. You may want to make sure that you're tailoring the choice. Again, it's that kind of, I'm thinking, you know, Match.com here. You kind of have
right,
to look
right.
at everybody in the house and think of everybody's needs and personalities and then make a good match.
Yeah, and go slow. Like,
yes.
like you said, do the slow introduction and be thoughtful about it. Don't just throw them into, you know, a room together because they're both animals or you think that they'll just figure it out. I really like that word, Lee,
being thoughtful, because I think we just kind of expect certain things and we wouldn't necessarily expect that on introductions to people. And so that
right.
thoughtfulness and that kindness in helping them be ready to live with each other is important.
Yeah, well, good. Okay. All right, well, what do you want people most to know about dogs and dog behavior?
Probably the number one thing is that you get what you reward. So
okay.
all good behavior takes practice and repetition. So we want to repeatedly, I call it filling a bank account. You want to fill a bank account with lots of deposits for that good behavior. Because if you're, I'm going to mix metaphors here, but your dog is then going to say, I want to gamble on this behavior because it's paid off well in the past. So that's what
yes.
you're looking to do.
Like begging at the table.
Yep, if they accidentally get something or if somebody is going against your wishes and feeding them at the table, that's a pretty big uphill climb for that dog. So maybe you need to, again, separate, interrupt the behavior, rethink the setting. One of the ways is to sit at a table with no food and teach the dog to lie down and stay in place.
Okay.
Versus having a yummy-smelling roast on the table, which is pretty hard to ignore. So we need to ask them to only perform at the level that we've taught them. You know, we don't take a kid that's just learned basic addition and throw them in an algebra class. They fail. And that we do that to dogs all the time. Just because they're able to handle something at one little level, we then take them on the road or take them to our friend's house and go, but he knows better. Well, sort of, but he's only in math class. He's not in algebra class.
Right. And I think being consistent is another element. I see people with that begging. The dog will be begging at the table. The person will give them something, but then the next time the dog begs, they'll say, no, you're not supposed to do that. It's like, well, you just fed them.
We think we're being nice by giving in that one time. The truth is we're making it harder for them because they can't read the rules. They can't understand except through what we show them. So consistency is actually kinder than giving that one bite of something. Because now you've given that consistent message. Excellent point.
Yeah, and that they know the rules. You know, with my dog, when I sit at the table, she knows that, you know, she doesn't even look anymore. You know, she's just off doing her own thing, and she's like, okay, you know. That's consistency. So, well, wonderful. All right, well, how can people get a hold of you, read more about you, find out more? Tell us about your website.
My website is www.velinovsky. It's a little hard, but I'll help. It's V as in Virginia, E-L-E, N as in Nancy, O, V as in Virginia, S-K-Y.com. You could also probably find me by Googling Janet Velinovsky or Googling Kaizen Pet Training and Behavior. And Kaizen is spelled K-A-I-Z-E-N.
Okay, yeah, no, that worked very well. Kaizen Pet Training, K-A-I-Z-E-N, and this is Janet Velinovsky. And go to her website, read more about her. She does classes and consults, and it's just a wealth of information and great volunteer work with Hope. Thank you so much for being here. It was delightful chatting with you. I very, very much enjoyed it.
It was my pleasure, Lee. Thanks so much for what you do for the pet community.
Well, you know, I love our pets and I love our relationship with them. So thank you everyone out there for listening and for being wonderful, loving pet owners. This is Honor Your Pet on All Paws Pet Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Ellie Merriweather of Pet Honoring. And please join us next time. Thank you very much. Bye, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Please visit pethonoring.com or email me at pethonoring.com.